well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. So, you know, the news broke yesterday afternoon that ATF getting ready to, well, immediately stop its zero tolerance policy that was putting FFLs out of business over inadvertent and minor paperwork errors. But they are also apparently reviewing some of the ATF rules put in place under the Biden administration, including the rule treating most pistols equipped with stabilized embraces as short-barreled rifles. The engaged in the business rule that says if you even offer a firearm for sale, a single gun for sale from your collection, you don't even have to complete that sale. But the act of offering that firearm for sale might make you an unlicensed gun dealer, subject to years in prison and hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines. Those rules apparently under review. And I think the expectation is that there will be a formal repeal process undertaken at some point. We're going to be talking with Pete Frisella, former Deputy Assistant Director of the ATF, whistleblower of Operation Fast and Furious, and a friend of Bearing Arms. I want to get Pete's take on the rules that are under review, as well as get his input as to what else we might see coming out of the ATF in the very near future. In fact, let's kick off that conversation right now. Take a look and a listen. Pete, it's good to see you again, my friend. Thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Always an honor to be here, my friend.
Well, the honor is all mine. I hope you're doing well. And I said to Pete before we started recording, I reached out yesterday morning before we got the news about the zero tolerance policy going away, about the ATF reviewing the pistol brace rule, the engage in the business rule. So I don't know if my spidey senses were tingling. I don't know if I should take credit for being so on the ball or if this was just one of those serendipitous moments, Pete. But regardless, I'm glad that we are able to talk about some of these moves with you today. So let me just ask first off, I mean, you know, what do you think about the demise of that zero tolerance policy where basically even minor infractions were being treated as willful violations of ATF policy, leading to license revocations?
Yeah. Well, look, you and I spoke about that. I've been very vocal about that because of what I lived through and, you know, what I described in my book. The FFLs were very important sources of information for us. They wanted to push back against violent criminals as much as any other person on the planet. I know that Dettelbach, and again, he's gone. He had some very strong opinions that were diametrically opposed to many of mine. But there were some in ATF, very, very high up, who actually had advocated that those things be signed off on with a wave of a pen to get rid of them. And the acting director at the time, Arvin Richardson, refused to do so. But there were others under him that wanted those things gone and wanted to get back into the world of going after armed, violent people. So I guess now with Kash Patel and Pam Bondi in place and some of the people at the deputy attorney general level, these things are happening. That's a good thing, I think. You know, again, ATF has lost a lot of trust. Not that they had a lot to begin with, during the Dettelbach era, how they get that back, if they get that back, is going to be the thing that I guess we're going to have to see. You've also heard rumors about mergers, and I heard that nothing's etched in stone. They're exploring different things. And along those lines, I hear that, candidly, that many gun rights organizations and gun control organizations have kind of almost joined forces to push back, saying, hey, we want ATF to remain because the devil you know, I guess, to some degree. And look, it's no secret. ATF was always very small, underfunded. I think the plan is to keep them that way. So those are the things that I'm hearing, among other things.
Interesting. I haven't heard specifically about any Second Amendment group saying, hey, keep the ATF as a separate entity. But I'm not going to speculate on who those organizations might be. But I think from an industry perspective, and again, I don't know that NSSF is one of those groups, but from an industry perspective, that certainly makes sense that, you know, the devil you know. And one of the complaints from, you know, the firearms industry over the past few years has been not just that whole of government attack on the industry, but, you know, again, you talk about like the pistol brace rule and is written so vaguely. You're never really sure if what you have is going to be considered a short-barreled rifle, but the rule is written in such a way that, you know, yeah, probably is, so you might as well go ahead and register it just to be on the safe side. You know, one of the things that the industry's been asking for, give us those bright lines, right? We can debate about where that bright line should be, whether it should be moving back, move it forward, but give us some clear, concrete rule to follow as opposed to these, maybe you're going to be in violation. We can't tell you. It's on a case-by-case basis. We need to see it. Kind of like, you know, the federal definition of obscenity, right? You know, when you see it. Right. That's a lot of how the ATF seems to have been operating with these rules. We'll know that you violated the rule when we see what you've done. But other than that, we can't tell you. So you're just going to have to roll the dice. So, you know, the pistol brace rule, as I said, is under review. The engaged in the business rule is under review. You know, I've talked about that engaged in the business rule, too, where, you know, offering a single firearm for sale can be seen under this rule as evidence that you are an unlicensed gun dealer, which was never the intent, right? I mean, the statutory language talks about, even under the Bipartisan Savers Community Act, which kind of broadened the definition just a little bit, you still are supposed to be engaged in a pattern, right, of a repetitive pattern of buying and selling firearms. The difference is it a primary source of income, or are you just making some money off of this? But it's still not supposed to just be a one-off or even a two-off, right? It's not supposed to be about people selling a firearm or two from their collection. And yet that's how the ATF was interpreting this rule.
And again, this is going back to the Dettelbach regime, and they're gone. And I think you're going to see things go in a dramatically different direction under this current regime. Plus, ATF chief counsel, and the gentleman's name escapes me, Pam Hicks, is gone. And the new counsel is actually someone who is a very knowledgeable person about the Second Amendment.
Yeah, Robert Leiter is his name. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't see these things lasting. The scary part, though, is, look, the next administration could come in and the pendulum could swing. And I hope that doesn't happen. But I can tell you from within the organization, the rank and file agents and some folks way, way high up in the chain wanted this stuff gone. And look, here's the thing. You know, a pistol brace, for example. Well, you have the firearms technology branch. They kind of come out with certain things and say, well, this is legal for sale. And then the next breath, hey, we've determined that it's no longer legal for sale. I can tell you, as someone who ran an ATF field division, the last thing I wanted agents doing was going on knocking on doors to try to ask people to surrender items to us that they purchased thinking they were legal. And now they're being told they're not legal. It was something that really rubbed me the wrong way and many of my peers. Especially when you're doing this while kids are getting shot and drive-by shootings, is like, are we really supposed to take our resources and go after law-abiding citizens to ask them to surrender something to us that they paid money for that most often we told them was legal when we have these violent crimes going on? We can't be in two places at the same time. So again, I think some law and order people have come back into power. And I think within ATF, again, acting director Marvin Richardson was stepped down to deputy director. I don't know how long he lasts in the organization, to be honest with you, because he could have signed off on overturning some of these things the moment Steve Dettelbach left. So I don't think that he sees eye to eye in some ways with the current administration. And I can tell you, like, within the walls of ATF, there's a lot of lack of confidence in his leadership. In fact, look, I'll tell you, truthfully, I'm probably going to get in trouble for telling this, but I'm going to tell you. Before I retired, there was actually a movement afoot by his deputy, a guy named Thomas Chittum, tried to push around a letter to try to get all of the executives within ATF during that time to send over to the deputy attorney general a vote of no confidence for Marvin's leadership. So, I mean, I think the timing, writing's on the wall, right? He was acting director and then replaced by another acting director. That's never happened before. And I think it's because this administration doesn't trust his leadership.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's interesting because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but like Marvin Richardson is one of those guys who's been around, right, for multiple administrations. Right. I know he was there during, going back to the Bush administration, I think, right?
Well, he was at Waco. He's been there since 1993. He's been an executive since the era of B. Todd Jones. But B. Todd Jones wasn't going after the industry. If you recall, B. Todd Jones and Tom Brandon firmly believed that the industry was the first line of defense in identifying the bad people trying to get their hands on guns. So Marvin's been there for a long time. Nice man. but his leadership style is a little different. He was also fully embracing of the DEI policies. I mean, took him really to the next level. So again, I think those sort of things might have put him on the radar in a bad way of this current administration. So just based on what I see, what I hear within DOJ, not just within ATF, because I still have sources there too, I know that there's not a lot of confidence in Marvin's abilities to lead.
Interesting.
Nice man. But hey, we all have a point, Cam, where it's, you know, we run out of gas and he may be at that point, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. And I mean, and again, it sounds like the changes, you know, what's interesting, as you say, Kash Patel is serving as the acting ATF director. He's been confirmed as the FBI director, but presumably Trump, he doesn't have to, but presumably Trump would nominate a permanent director of the ATF at some point. Because if Kash Patel, I mean, let's face it, you know, running the FBI is a full-time job.
Yes.
Running the ATF is a full-time job. Yes. So if Kash Patel is going to have to delegate that, some of that responsibility, who does that responsibility fall on? And is it going to be somebody like Marvin Richardson, or is it going to be somebody who is, you know, I think more in line, with the administration's goals and objectives for the agency? So
what I've heard they're interviewing an attorney who's very close with the NRA. I believe his name's like Fauzet or something like that. The pronunciation escapes me at the moment. I know they're leaning quite heavily on Bob Sicada, who was the acting deputy director when Marvin Richardson was the acting director. Bob's a retired NYPD detective, great agent, worked for me in Florida. I've known him for 35 years. He's as pro-Second Amendment as they come. So I think that his vision would probably be very much in line with that of this administration and with people who just pro-law and order. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, it could be somebody, some wild card. But I agree, ATF should have a director. I don't know that it will merge with DEA like some are speculating. But again, who knows? This administration is certainly moving very quickly with a lot of things that have people scratching their heads in good and bad ways. So, I mean, I guess we just have to say anything's possible, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Listen, I'm still rooting for ATF Director P for Sally. I mean, I'm still holding out hope. I don't know if you're rooting for that, but I'm rooting for that.
My wife is certainly not rooting for that. Look, if I were asked to serve the administration, I of course I'm not going to say no to my president. But I don't know if people know this. The ATF director, the salary is capped at $178,000 a year. That's less than many of his subordinates make. I mean, they're NYPD lieutenants. I'm sitting here in New York as I speak to you. NYPD lieutenants with overtime made over $400,000. And the ATF director makes $178,000. So, I mean, it's not a job that you take to get rich. And sitting through a confirmation hearing where you could be a good guy and they're still going to kick you around like a soccer ball, you got to ask, is it worth it? You know?
All right. Well, like I said, I'm still holding out hope. But Pete, as always, man, I really do appreciate you coming on the program. Thank you so much for your insight, for your information, for your analysis as well. And look forward to doing this again very soon, my friend.
Well, it's good seeing you. It's been a while. And much love and respect to you and yours.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Pete Forselli joining us here on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. My thanks to Pete for joining us on the program. I always like to get the skinny. The download from Pete whenever he joins us on the show. Right now, though, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with the story from CWB Chicago. Not a specific incident, but more of an ongoing concern in Cook County, where the problem-plagued electronic monitoring program has become a, quote, serious threat to public safety, according to the Cook County State's Attorney, who, by the way, is not Kim Fox any longer. She did not run for re-election. Eileen O'Neill Burke is the new state's attorney. Ran as sort of a law and order candidate. She's talked about – she's actually done something that I think is a good step, taking people who've been charged with basically possessing a firearm without a permit – moving them into a diversionary program, but also allowing them to get a FOID card so that they can become a legal gun owner. I don't like the FOID system in Illinois. I think the FOID system is unconstitutional and needs to go away. But as long as it's in place, I think that is the right move. So I'm cautiously pleased with what O'Neill Burke has done since she took office. Well, I guess it was back in January. She has an issue, though, with what's going on with Cook County's electronic monitoring program. So on April the 1st, the authority to the oversight for that program fell under the auspices of Chief Judge Timothy Evans. It is no longer run out of the Cook County Sheriff's Office. And she has an issue with that. She says the judge, Timothy Evans, not equipped or prepared to handle the responsibilities for all of these ankle monitor devices. And she has basically instructed her staff now, when they request that somebody be held without bond until they go to trial, and a judge says, no, we're going to put them on ankle monitor instead, that they publicly object to this because she wants to raise attention to the problems with this system. And one of her chief concerns is that with the judge now running this program and now the sheriff, if somebody violates the terms of their probation, you can't just call out deputies right away and have them go pick that person up, right? There's another layer of bureaucracy that has to be added on here because the judge is not technically a law enforcement officer. So they've got to contact 911. They've got to contact police. And this is going to make it more difficult to police these individuals who are on a monitoring device. And again, if people violate the terms of their release and there are no consequences, what happens? You're going to have a lot more violations, right? She said in a memo to her staff that these personnel are not law enforcement officers, cannot investigate, seek escape charges, or obtain an arrest warrant if a person absconds. So the only recourse is to call 911 or seek assistance from law enforcement and then advance the case to the court call to report that information to a judge. She talks about some of the people who are under the monitoring of these individuals who don't have law enforcement powers. She says people who are charged with murder, attempted murder, predatory criminal sexual assault, numerous other violent offenses like aggravated battery, felony domestic battery, various other sexual assault and abuse charges. And again, they basically removed a layer of oversight from this process there in Cook County. And she thinks that is a threat to public safety. I think she might be right. And I guess we'll have to see going forward. On to today's Armed Citizen story. This from KTBS in Shreveport, Louisiana. The headline, homeowner shoots suspected car burglar, second suspect on the run. Now, I'll tell you up front here that, you know, typically in most states, shooting to protect property is not allowed. That's not self-defense. Some states, using lethal force to protect property is allowed. But the headline, I think, doesn't quite tell the whole story here, because this was not simply a shooting to stop somebody from burglarizing a car. The individual who was shot, 18-year-old Jamelvian Lewis, taken to a local hospital with life-threatening injuries. Doctors now, though, think that he will make a full recovery after being shot early Saturday morning. According to the Shreveport Police, Lewis and at least one other person responsible for a series of crimes in the area, including at least five vehicle burglaries, one theft of a gun, one theft of a vehicle. The shooting itself reported about 3:30 Saturday morning. The 911 caller said when the suspect saw him making a call, they began approaching, fearing for his safety and his family's safety. The caller said he discharged his firearm twice, striking Lewis in the upper body. When officers arrived, they immediately began performing first aid on Lewis. And they found that he was armed with a firearm, which had later been reported stolen out of a Bossier City. So he was armed. The second suspect drove away in a stolen vehicle, but abandoned a short distance away before running away. He has not been taken into custody. The 911 caller, fully cooperating with investigators, has not been charged with any crime. Lewis, meanwhile, has been charged with one count of possession of a stolen firearm, but additional charges are expected. And again, this wasn't just, hey, he's trying to steal my car, pew, 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 right? He warned these individuals, hey, get away. The individuals instead started approaching him, fearing for his safety. That's when he discharged his firearm. And as it turns out, that Lewis was armed as well. So I think that it was, let's put it this way. I think a jury of this guy's peers in Shreveport, Louisiana, would view that as a reasonable use of force given the circumstances. And again, I don't expect any charges to be filed in this case, but we'll keep our eyes open, let you know of any additional details there out of Shreveport, Louisiana. And finally today, in the right place at the right time, a soldier from Fort Knox who helped save a victim of a drive-by shooting in Radcliffe, Kentucky, not long ago. Staff Sergeant Jared Draper said he was raised in a small farm town in Iowa. He said, we were raised to take ownership of our area. Always look out for your neighbor. And on February 22nd, he did just that. There were multiple drive-by shootings that took place in Radcliffe, Kentucky. during the month of February, one of them again on February 22nd. He said that when that happened, he had gone about his day. He was taking out the trash and he heard what sounded like gunshots. So he opened the door to see what caused the noise and he saw a white van speeding away. So he called 911. He said he then grabbed his gun and his military issued individual first aid kit and then went out to inspect the scene. He said, I started walking around, seeing if there was anybody who was struck just in case. And he discovered that one of his neighbors actually did have a gunshot wound to his right leg. So Draper quickly applied a tourniquet, put a pressure dressing on the wound, conducted a blood sweep of the individual to ensure that there were no other injuries. All that before first responders arrived on scene. He said it was honestly just a case of right place, right time. He said the only other option was to let him bleed out. And that just wasn't an option. So a few days ago, April 4th, the Fort Knox Garrison Command Team awarded Draper with the Army Commendation Medal for his actions that day. He said the only reward he really needed was knowing that he had helped somebody in a situation that could have had a tragic ending. He said the individual's dad was there and he just kept saying, thank you. Thank you. That's my boy. And he said, you know, the award is nice, but honestly, the only recognition that's actually worth it to me, he said, is knowing that you did something for someone's family. Pretty outstanding. So, again, in the right place, at the right time, wasn't able to do the right thing. Not for the accolades, but because it was the right thing to do. Staff Sergeant Jared Draper, there in Fort Knox, Kentucky, we thank you for your very, very good deed. And that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Hey, don't forget, by the way, Wednesdays, you know, we do our VIP Gold Live Chat, 1:30 Eastern, Hot Airs at Morrissey and myself. We'll be taking questions, comments. Have a great time with our VIP Gold members. Would love for you to be a part of that. All you have to do is become a VIP Gold member. Easy enough. If you use the promo code FIGHT when you sign up, 60% off your VIP Gold or VIP Platinum membership. You get all kinds of exclusive benefits, but you'll also be supporting the work that we're doing here at Bearing Arms. We greatly appreciate that support. So, again, you can subscribe, sign up, use the promo code FIGHT, get some great savings, and hopefully we'll see you tomorrow for the VIP Gold live chat. If not, we'll see you back here for another Cam & Company. Until then, be well. Be safe. Be free.